Okay, this is Dennis Emery, and we're here to do another session of the Legends of Kentucky Tennis. And I'm here with Michael Cunningham today, Hall of Fame member last year. So you've been a first-year member of the Hall of Fame.
Yes, correct. Yep, 2024, so or just got inducted in January of 25.
You know, and the great thing, Michael, is I know some about your background because I grew up in New Albany. Grew up at Silver Creek, right? In Charleston, is that correct?
Sellersburg,
Indiana.
Yep.
And went to Silver Creek.
Silver Creek High School.
Was that the beginning of your tennis career?
Yeah, it really was, because as a 6, 7, 8, 9-year-old, I was playing baseball and basketball, and my mom was playing tennis. So I would do tennis during the summers. And then, you know, it just kind of went from there. Each year, I kept getting a little older and playing a little bit more. And that's where it all started.
So you played in the Central Indiana Tennis Association, I'm assuming.
Correct.
Not Kentucky.
Correct.
But Central Indiana.
Yep. But practice with all the Louisville kids. So I practice with the Southern Indiana and the Louisville kids during the winter, and then I go play tournaments, you know, towards Indianapolis a lot of times.
So who were your contemporaries from Louisville?
From Louisville, you go back kind of my age range within a year or two of me. It's Chris McRae, Scott Triplett, Cameron Marshall. Then there's a Johnny Liu and Chris Gonyers. Those guys were a few years younger than me. So that was kind of a really good group. You know, Matt would have been.
Right.
Your son was maybe 3 years behind me.
Right.
And stuff. So that is a really deep competitive group. And then you threw in all the, you know, Southern Indiana kids from Jeffersonville, the Chris Crawford and some other people like that.
So as a junior player, when did you start playing the tournaments?
Yeah, I got in tournaments in 91. I was 11 going on 12. And I played the first, I played a tournament at Silver Creek High School, had one. New Albany had a couple. I think I played 3 tournaments that first year. And really liked it, enjoyed it, probably lost more than I won, but just enjoyed the battling and it being an individual sport. It was getting my interest more than the team sports. And that's kind of where the tournament started in 91.
Right. So a guy who had a big impact on your life, who had a big impact on my life too, was a guy named Mike Crabtree, who was the coach at Silver Creek High School.
Yes.
When did you start working with Mike? Was that 9th grade year or before?
Yeah, it was probably before. I got Mike Crabtree had a good high school program going from the 80s. He had been the tennis coach. I think he took over in the early 80s, if I remember correctly, and built a summer program. So we did, and he was the assistant principal for years, then the principal in the 90s. And we would do 2-a-days. So we would do 7:30 to 9 a.m. And then we come back at 4:30 to 6 in the afternoon. So it was for the high school program. And then they would even include any 6th, 7th, or 8th graders who could, you know, keep up with the high school kids. So I think it was probably, I think that's 92 or 93 summer. They kind of noticed I was good enough, could keep up all that and out of the little junior programs. And so I started getting played in the high school thing as a, you know, 12, 13-year-old, and then started doing a little work on the side with Mike, and then I got my private once a week with Dale Cochran, so I got to in Louisville, so I would do that during the summer.
So where was Dale?
Dale was at that time the old DuPont Racquet Club,
right?
Or I guess Advantage now or whatever today, and then during the summers, he would be at one of the country clubs like Big Springs or one of those in Louisville. So that's kind of – my mom had taken lessons from him. So I got to take a lesson once a week during the winter and stuff. And then I would work it and go to Larry Klein's. I started Larry Klein's Monday, Wednesday, or Friday clinics at Mockingbird Valley back in the day before he went to LTC.
Uh-huh.
And that's kind of – that was all started – that's probably 92, 93, 94. That was all that – you know, 12, 13, 14-year-old when I got serious at it and doing the high school programming. And in Indiana, the fall season for boys is – or the season is fall.
Right.
And so you play all summer, and then you'd have your fall tennis. And then and you could not play before 9th grade, unlike Kentucky where you can play. So you had to be a 9th grader to play on the high school team. But I got to practice with him for 3 years prior to that.
Interesting. Well, just so you knew, no, I grew up with Dale Cochran, and I played a lot of tennis with Dale Cochran.
Yes.
And, you know, before he went, when he was at UT Chattanooga.
Yes.
He went to UT, and then he transferred to Kentucky.
Yep. I remember hearing that.
Before I was Cats the coach. Fan. Yeah, and played number one at Kentucky.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a while.
Yeah.
What was the highlights of your junior tennis?
I'd say the highlights, you know, it's, I probably don't have one necessarily of junior tennis. I think a lot of it was the playing tournaments every weekend. And, you know, we would go to down to Evansville, Indiana, and up to Indianapolis. I'd play some in Louisville, come to Lexington. And it just kind of kept building every summer. And there's probably a few matches that stand out along the way, but it was never, you know, I never won a Midwest championship or won the CITA or anything like that. But I think it was just a consistent building every year, getting better. The ranking went higher. You know, I was ranked in the 30s and as in the 20s and as in the teens. And I think it was just that thing. A couple matches I remember playing with Matt Walton, who was a year older than me. And so we played tournaments together. And then doubles was always, we practiced doubles all the time during the summer. And so, you know, going to a tournament, you played singles and doubles.
Right.
And the doubles was always the really fun part. Singles, you know, it was always tough, stressful, you know, and you win, lose, all that. But doubles was fun. And I'd say I probably won more doubles tournaments over the 4 or 5 year stretch. Won a lot of doubles tournaments over that stretch, but we practiced so much doubles all the time, serving and volleying, going to the net. You know, at 12, 15 years old, that paid off.
Uh-huh.
And we beat some really good players out of Indianapolis and Louisville and different things like that on the double side. So that was one. One I do have, I played with Mike Crabtree's son, Kevin.
Uh-huh.
He ended up having, you know, got cancer and had that battle and kind of missed his high school career.
Right.
Ended up having a knee replacement and stuff. But he didn't tell his mom and dad that he's going to go down to French Lick and play the tournament. And I think I was sophomore. I was 15. And we played the and he was 18. So it was his last chance to play a junior tournament. And he didn't tell his mom and dad. And he goes, well, I'm going down to French Lick. You know, a bunch of the guys are playing. I want to go down there. We ended up playing doubles and ended up getting to the finals of 18. So he kind of carried me along. I'll always remember that match. I mean, it's just one of those things that is kind of cool. And I know Mike even has told me too. He goes, you know, Kevin never told us that. But, you know, I'm glad, you know, we were you know, kind of irritated, but then kind of like, wow, that's crazy. So, but that was a really cool memory of juniors.
You know, you had, it seems to me like you had several coaches who had a huge impact on your life. Mm-hmm. And I know Mike Crabtree was one of those. Mm-hmm. What did he mean in your life to you, in your tennis life?
Yeah, I think in my tennis life, and it bled over to how I went about my day in day. It's just, you know, showing up and he would put us through adversity during practice. So practice wasn't just hitting balls and, let's play some games now. It might start off first 20 minutes, warm up, and do some types of drill and cross-court forehands and backhands. And then if he saw something sometimes, or if it looked like a bunch of us 15-year-olds were just a little tired or not moving fast enough, he would ratchet up the volume of his voice. And then you knew you had to go. And I think just that type of thing of knowing that you can push yourself more, and he would push you even more than you knew what you could do. And I failed at practice all the time. I remember losing games to guys. We'd play down the line games, and if you hit the ground stroke and it bounced in the alley, you won the point. Well, I didn't hit the first one in the alley. I mean, there was a lot of mind games in these little, you know, games that you go, oh, that's a stupid game. I just got beat, you know, 1-7. Uh-huh. And we always played to 7. And, but then when I go play, you know, I could get to use the serve, all that stuff. You know, you get to use your whole game. I was better than a lot of players. But in practice, he challenged you so mentally. And can you figure out a way to, you know, defeat the purpose of this game? And I think that was the biggest thing. It wasn't just about stroke production. It wasn't about just hit a big forehand or whatever. It was just trying to constantly mentally challenge you and see if you could, you know, could you overcome that? Could you figure out a way to win this one little game right now for the next 15 minutes?
Uh-huh.
So it always put those things in perspective. So, you know, and then, you know, the rest of the game always developed. But another thing is, too, you know, you always bounce an overhead over the fence if you get a chance. He goes, there's usually one fence. And he said, sometimes you're on a court and you're going to have a side fence. And he said, if you're close enough to the net, the one way you will never lose a point is to bounce an overhead over the fence. So that was the thing. I mean, we live for every day is to bounce a ball over the fence, get an overhead. So those were the two big things that I really take away from that.
Great, great coach. I mean, I think you would agree with me. You were very lucky to have someone like him as a high school coach.
Because, oh, absolutely.
You know, sometimes you have really good high school coaches, and other times, you know, you don't.
Yeah.
But you really had one. Yeah. What was the best your all's team did in the high school?
We always got to the regional. So in Indiana, it's team-oriented. The individuals is at the very end of state high school. So a little different than Kentucky and some other states. But our team, we won the sectional something like 25, 26 years in a row. And
wow.
I was somewhere in the middle of that. And then regional, they'd won for years, but then Jeffersonville and Floyd Central, you know, they were both – Mark Riley was coach of Jeffersonville, and Rick Miller was coach of Floyd Central. So, you know, it was difficult to win that regional because you would get, you know, multiple sectional winners come together. So we lost in the regional my 4 years, you know, but I mean, just good teams, Jeffersonville, Floyd Central. Cody Conley was on the Floyd Central team, went to U of L. Chris Crawford was on that Jeff team that was always good. And New Albany always had a fair team too, you know, so it was always tough, but we did that. And then, Yeah, that's the best we did as a team. Individually, I played two singles my sophomore, junior year, or one singles and my junior and senior year and stuff. So I could never advance to the state finals, but I made first team and second team all state, sophomore, junior, and senior.
Well, you know, just kind of finish up this little segment here.
Yeah.
What was the highest you were ever ranked in the juniors in Indiana?
Yeah, Indiana CITA, I think I got up to right around 10. And I think it was 10 or 11 when I was, I think that was when I was 17. I think it was in 18, 16, 17, 18. I was there right around top 10. I think my Midwest ranking was somewhere 40 to 60-ish, somewhere in there. So, you know, and that CITA was a big section for the Midwest.
Yes.
It was a deep section. You get, you know, another section up in Wisconsin and the 10th ranked player was not very good at all in that section. But I was in just such a deep section that, you know, trying to get there, and they always took, I think, 8 or 9 from the CITA to the Midwest. And so I qualified one time, but you know, it was just tough to qualify for that tournament. Because of all
which the then qualified you for national clays, national hard courts, and
exactly.
Everything. Yeah, growing up in New Albany, you know, I started really late, but you know, the Midwest was always at North Central High School.
It was
up there with like 40 courts, and I remember walking in there the first time thinking, "Oh my goodness!"
Yeah,
you know, they had that big trailer there.
Yes.
Yeah,
that's a phenomenal facility up there.
Well. So now, you know, your game takes a jump. You're going to go to college.
Yeah.
How do you end up at Georgetown? And then I know you came in contact with another coach who had a huge impact on your life.
Yeah.
But how did you get recruited to Georgetown?
Yeah.
Or were you recruited? Did you recruit yourself?
No, I was recruited, and I know – John Herring was coach at Georgetown. So I was looking at, Eastern Kentucky University and Western. I talked to Coach True. I talked to, IU Southeast. Even kind of my goal at that time, I was a big Indiana fan, so I would have loved to have gone to IU. And I've probably been a walk-on at that time, but I knew guys ahead of me, years ahead of me, that I've played close with. So I thought, that outside chance. But they had a big recruiting class for a couple years in a row. So that wasn't an option. EKU and WKU, kind of same thing. Got a lot of Kentucky, Tennessee, Indiana kids, both of those schools at that time. And mixed in some internationals there in the late 90s. So they had other big classes. And I was kind of the same level as a lot of the other guys that were going to several of those schools. Georgetown reached out. So I came down for a visit in January. And Coach Aaron said, come down, visit, practice with the team. It's like, okay, so it's January. It's cold outside. You're going, where are we going to practice? And it's like, where are we practicing at? All right, well, we're indoors at the University of Kentucky indoor tennis facility. And we're practicing at 11 p.m. on Monday and Wednesday night. So it's 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. time slot. And I was like, okay, well, all right. So my dad took me down there. We did the late practice, stayed the night, and then I went to class with a couple guys the next day. So I met a lot of the guys on team. We had this late night practice, which, not everybody's used to practicing at 11 p.m.
Right.
or anything. But it's always been something that had gone on for years. And so that's kind of how I had that. Visited the other schools, went back and forth, and then it's probably April. And then finally it's like, all right, I'm going to have to make a decision. And, a lot of the spots, the schools, different programs that kind of, I've got this, and this, might be able to offer you this or that. And then Georgetown kind of came through with a nice offer, and John was very interested, and he got another guy from Owensboro who is a foreign exchange student, Edgar Sabarit.
Right.
And that was going to come. And then John, really was pushing to get me. And then finally I could start to tell, I had interest. And I thought, I really do want to go to a place where, you have that interest. The size and the D1 and the D2 and NAI, that's all, it is what it is. But, that's not the only value. You got to go somewhere. And I'd seen John play a little bit, and a couple of the guys go, oh, yeah, he can still play. He's 34 years old. Like, he can go out there and whoop our butts still. And it's kind of like, okay, well, let's see. So once I got there, I learned, just like the rest of them, he could still whoop our butts. So,
yeah. You're talking about your scholarship. When you got your Hall of Fame induction, I thought the mm-hmm. highlight of the whole evening, mm-hmm. he has a very strong class that went in with you. Yep. One of them being Andy Jackson, know, who played for me at Kentucky, but
correct.
Went on to be, he'll be a Hall of Fame coach
yes.
for what he's done at Florida and everything. Mm-hmm. And you got the David Jackson, the Jackson Family Scholarship.
Yes.
There.
Yeah. That was part of my scholarship. And, I always knew it. And whenever and so at private schools like Georgetown, not non-public at that time, they were always building a scholarship out of multiple small scholarships.
Right.
And as I was learning and stuff. So anyways, part of my scholarship was, I think it's $2,500 a year, and it was the Jackson Family Scholarship because David had gone to Georgetown and said, I'll do a little one for tennis and stuff since Andy was a tennis player and stuff. And so I had it, and I always remember because I had to go into financial aid each year and write a thank you note. And so at that time, they made, everybody, most everybody, I assume, kind of went in, hey, come over to financial aid. And so I'd write a thank you note, and then you would get one back in the mail. David, he would send one, I remember, most years and stuff. So it's always that little thing that was like, part of this is this Jackson Scholarship. So I always knew who Andy Jackson was, and then, meeting, talking to you and different things. And so, yeah, it was a really unique thing. And then to, be lucky enough to get chosen for the Kentucky Hall of Fame and Andy and the same one, I started thinking, I was like, this is just too strange. What a unique, how tennis circles around and everything.
I told Andy, I said, no offense, because Andy got in, you know, the same night.
Correct.
And I did his induction speech, and I told Andy, I said, no offense, but the highlight of the evening was Michael Cunningham talking about receiving the Jackson Family Scholarship and your dad and everything. So I can just tell you they were thrilled.
Yeah.
But I've gone to a lot of those Hall of Fame things, and there was nothing quite as touching as that,
Thank you.
So John Herring becomes your coach. What did you learn from John Herring?
Oh, you know, it's another thing. I don't think it's one thing in particular, but I think learning how to build your game and improve around the strengths that you already have. So my strengths at that time at 18 years old coming to Georgetown was I had a nice serve and I came to the net a lot. I volleyed, I chipped and charged. So John understood that part of the game. That's a, you know, a big part of John's game is going towards net. So he and I, that really
jived. It's the only part of John's game.
Right? It is the only part of John's game, exactly.
But very, very successful at it.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. So I started learning different plays, you know, of hitting a, you know, a kick serve, you know, out wide to the backhand side and serving and volleying on that, which I didn't serve and volley on the kick serve as much. It was, I just depended on my first serve so much. But started learning how to move that ball and hitting drop shot volleys off low balls. Just little things like that. And once again, we practiced a lot of doubles. And that was another strength that John had, you know, just, oh, well, when you're doing this, you know, if you're doing this. And so a lot of that mental development and using your skills. And then, of course, my roommate was Edgar Sebreit, who was from Spain, did 1 year here at Owensboro as a foreign exchange student. He was a great ground stroker. He just struck the ball beautifully. So that helped improve my ground stroke game because the longer you're in college, it's like you got to have a ground stroke game.
Yeah.
And I didn't have much coming in. And so we spent hours just hitting. And so my ground stroke game really improved. So once that improved and with the net game, all of a sudden, I really completed that next level being a complete player, and I was very advanced at the net. So Edgar and I actually became a phenomenal doubles team, and we were ranked top 10 in the country for two out of our 4 years.
Wow.
We were ranked top 25 3 years. So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, with John coaching and the other players on the team at that time, Anthony Miller and Bill Williams and Kelly Horseman and Rob Austin, all those guys, you know, we're all competitive. We're all very close and level. Clayton Hall was another one. And we all were good doubles players because John would come in, he was working at Georgetown College in the administration also. And he would come to practice at say 3:30 or whatever time. He'd show up, he'd have his loafers on and his khakis and, a golf shirt or maybe a button-up shirt. He'd put on tennis shoes most of the time, and we'd start practicing. And then sometimes if he was, you know, we weren't working hard enough, he would jump in there and get after us and yell at us a little bit, and we would up the game. And then he would just grab a racket sometimes. Or if he had his Prince Precision, you know, he would jump out there and – I mean, just start cold and start firing serves or jump in, hit balls with us. And it was like, I don't know, you know, if John was jumping out there in his dress clothes, you know, we had to up our game again. So once again, learning that at a young age, like you got to push yourself, you know, I mean, you're going to make a ton of mistakes, but you got to push yourself to, you know, to try and be elite every time.
Now, at that point in time, was Georgetown an NAI school?
Correct. It was still NAI. So it's been NAI for pretty much forever prior to me and still currently. And the women's program in the 90s was better than the men's program. But then you had T.C. Lackey and Kevin Calhoun and a bunch of those guys leading the way. And then a bunch of the guys I played with, Edgar and I came in. And we just finally made the depth, and the men's team finally had the depth. We were probably 8 to 10 deep, and you could put number 9 in at 4 singles and get a win, and you could put the number 7 and 10 guy in at 3 doubles and get a win. And we had this depth those first 2 years especially. So it really worked out well, and so we ended up getting ranked. I think the highest we were, we got up to 19 in the country as a team, and we won. We tied for winning the conference once, and we're second place in the conference multiple times. So in
my second time, place to who?
At that time, Cumberland University of Tennessee. We tied with them. I think that was my freshman year, and then. Of course, Cumberland College, or University of the Cumberlands, as they're called now, was always right up there.
Right.
Coach Tan was coaching there at that time and still
at
today.
That
yeah, at that time. And
still.
Yeah, exactly. And still. So it was always very highly competitive. And it's that conference, that Mid-South Conference, has always been very good, very deep.
What would you say were your highlights individually in college, because those would be the highlights of your team.
Mm-hmm.
But what were your individual highlights? Are there any matches, that wins that stood out to you, or close losses?
Yeah. I that's where I really got some better highlights. My freshman year, myself and Edgar got ranked in singles in the fall. I think I was 32 and he was 14 nationally. And we got ranked in doubles. And out of the gate, my first college match, well, no, I think we had played something the week before, but the ITA regional in the
right.
fall was held at the University of Kentucky. And it was on the 16 outdoor courts where the parking garage is, and
uh-huh.
the new one's going up. And I played on where the current parking garage is.
Uh-huh.
And I beat the number 4 seed. That's pretty much my first official college match. And Luis Pazzi, I'll never forget his name. He's an Italian guy, and he's a senior, and he's left-handed. And I beat him 7-6 in the full third set. We played full third sets at that time. Beat him 7-6 in third, a scrawny little freshman serving a volley against this lefty who just would stay back at the baseline and slide around and stuff. And that was a huge win for me and gave me a lot of confidence. And then I kind of petered out from there, but each year I always came out of summer. I trained all summer to peak for that tournament. I realized that's the tournament we want to win. And Edgar and I got to the finals of doubles my sophomore year, and then we won it our junior year, and then we lost the finals of doubles our senior year. So those three things. So we got to go to the national tournament our junior year
uh-huh.
in the fall, and so there are 8 regions. The 8 winners play off for to be a national champion, and we lost, then we won our next match, and I think we lost our last one too. So we ended up 6 in the country in the fall, and that's probably one of the biggest things. I clinched a few matches along the way. I always played 2 singles or 1 singles. A couple highlights on spring break trips. I know I clinched a match one time for a 5-4 win. That was fun. At 1 and 2, you don't get to clinch too many matches.
Uh-huh.
They're either over or yeah. somebody else is clinching. And then I played one. We played on clay in Hilton Head, clay court facility, and we played College of Wooster, I think, Division 3 in Ohio. And I played so well that day. I played 1 singles, and I came out serving volley on clay, and this guy, he was a very solid player, and I just was – on fire, playing well, win first set 6-0. He's not happy. It's hot. And I beat him the second set, I think, 6-1. And the guy had 4 rackets. He just walked out 4 rackets and a towel. And he goes out the gate. I won in under an hour. Goes out the gate, and there was a pond right next to the tennis courts. And we see him. He starts yelling, and all of a sudden, you just see these rackets go flying in the air. And he threw all 4 rackets. They had threw him into the pond. I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but that's like one of those highlights. It's like, can't explain. And it's just one of those days I had everything working, and he didn't have an answer for me.
What a great feeling.
But,
huh?
Yeah. And then I was ranked almost every year in the top 50 nationally. So I'm always proud of that. And I run across guys now that I play against in the 30s, 35s, 40s, or well, 40s, 45s now. People who are within 3 or 4 years of me. And I've got some rankings back in 99, 2000, 2001, 2002. And I run across guys that are playing adult tournaments. We're playing at national tournaments. And, you know, it's like, oh, you were ranked. Oh, you played for, you know, Weber International, or you played at Shorter or Barry or the Azusa Pacifics and all these NAIA schools in the West Coast. So I run across guys nowadays that, you know, they played at Pepperdine or played at Division One, Two, Three, or even NAIA. So it's fun.
So you graduate now.
Yep.
What year is that? What year did you graduate?
May of 2002.
Okay.
Yep.
Do you think I'm going to go play pro tennis? What am I going to do? Yeah. You know what? Yeah. What were your thoughts coming out of school?
Out of school, you know, the pro tennis thing wasn't necessarily realistic, and I had asked a lady to marry me our senior year of college, so I was like, yeah, I'm probably not going to be traveling, be a pro. So, but Jessica, at that time, Jessica Virgin, we were planning on getting married. She's graduating at Georgetown also, and she played tennis, had a good collegiate tennis career, and so, you know, our thought, you know, I'd been playing three or four tournaments every summer. I was like, well, I can still play these money tournaments like the Weldon down in Glasgow, uh-huh. Kentucky, and the boat club had a tournament and different things. I thought, I'm going to keep playing, you know? I mean, it just, I'm playing well, I've gotten better. And so that was just the idea of always just keep playing these open tournaments. And then there's money tournament in Cincinnati at Christmas, and there's different things around. So I thought, man, this is fun, you know? And there's also USTA leagues, which I hadn't played, or I'd played mixed doubles in. So that was kind of the thought. I was like, you know, and I got to play the qualifier for the, at that time, what was it called? Was it the fifth third? Was
yes.
You know, early 2000s there that you helped run and everything. So I got to play the qualies for that multiple times, you know, show up and play those matches. So, you know, my goal was to, like, I'm just going to keep playing and keep practicing, and I had a lot of, yeah, I could teach a lot of lessons on the side, so it's like, oh, that's extra money on the side. So that was kind of the goal, you know, in 2002, and then we're getting married and got married in 2003, and Jessica and I were the Frankfurt Country Club pros for 4 summers leaving college.
That's great.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're going to get into how you transition into senior tennis, mm-hmm. you know, but for right now, you played those tournaments,
mm-hmm.
okay? Professionally, what did you decide to do?
Yeah, I was looking for what I thought I wanted to do. I just wanted a, you know, quote-unquote, like a desk job, you know, just get in at something. You know, I didn't want to teach tennis necessarily. I was kind of – I wanted to play, but I didn't want to teach 8 hours a day.
Uh-huh.
I like teaching tennis, but I didn't – for some reason, that was not a goal of mine to just be on the court all the time, even though I love being on the court. So it's kind of a backwards way. So finally got a job, a human resource job for Kentucky, the KCTCS, the Community and Technical College System in Kentucky.
Right.
Did that for about a year and a half, and it was a desk job. You know, show up at 8:30, leave at 4:30, and all of a sudden, I started realizing that's kind of boring. Like, I need something more. So I was like, well, do I go back teaching tennis or what? And then a friend of mine that I'd met through John, Steve Carroll, John Heron, Steve Carroll played a lot of tournaments and were playing some adult tournaments. He had an insurance agency. Said, hey, we're looking for, we want to grow with some youth. You know, I was 24 years old. You know, hey, it's a sales job. You know, think about it. You know, we'll build it for you for 3 years. You know, give it, you know. I was like, well, I got time. And Jessica and I, she was in graduate school at UK working on her PhD. So, you know, I had a time period of going, well, maybe this will work. And it was a little step up and things. And Steve goes, you're still going to have your flexibility. You know, I know you love playing tennis tournaments. You know, go play tennis tournaments. You know, take off on a Friday and, you know, go wherever uh-huh. and stuff. So I was like, well, this is great. You know, this is right up my alley, and they understand my tennis fixation. So that's what I started doing for 2004, 5, 6, 7, and on. And I'm still there at the same structure of the agency. We're a different name now. But it's, so I've done it now for 21 years. But, you know, it took 3 or 4 years. And I get a little older and mature at that in that game and stuff, and I still got to keep playing tennis. And then slowly people started knowing me as Michael, a good tennis player, oh, and he's, what are you doing now? Oh, you're doing insurance. Okay. And as time went on, I got 25, 27, 29, 30. All of a sudden, it kind of changed. People were starting to know me as, oh, Michael is a good tennis player. You do insurance. Hey, can you do this? I've got a small business, or I've got my home and auto or something like that. So I ended up at finally, I always thought, you know, I should be in the tennis community. And that ended up crossing over very well. So I made a lot of connections, and a lot of people would, you know, hey, I've got this, I've got that, and wrote a lot of insurance for tennis players, tennis facilities, different things. So it's been a great crossover. And I got a call actually just last week from a lady that I met at a tennis tournament last summer, and she lives in Florida. And she goes, I don't know any other tennis player who does insurance. There's probably one out there. She goes, I know you.
Yeah.
So I still have those connections I'm making with people across the country now for, you know, it's a nice policy here or there. So
that's awesome. Yeah. Well, you transition into playing senior tennis. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
Yeah, that happened. So I've been playing just open tournaments, you know, in my 20s. And so then there's, you know, the age tournament started at age 30. So you got 30, 35, 40, all the way up to 85, 90. So I'd been seeing it, hearing it, and hearing these legends, essentially, who had been playing these. And John Herring, when I was in college, he got to the finals of the grass courts when he was 36, 35, 36, something like that, early 2000s. And every couple of years, I'd hear he was playing this, or I'm going to go play the clays in the 40s or whatever. I was like, man, that seems like fun, you know, and stuff. So I was 30, it's 2010, and T.C. Lackey and John Herring played tournaments, and T.C.'s 5 years older than me, played at Georgetown College, and he just aged into 35s, and he asked John to play the grass courts in Philadelphia, the 35s, and John said, yeah, that's great, and then he and I would practice still. And he goes, I'm going up here, you know, they have 30s now. The 30s and 35s are together, you know. I'm going to go up there and just play doubles. Do you want to go up there and play? I go, yeah, I think I can. So worked it out. It was early September. It was Labor Day weekend. And I played doubles with John. TC played doubles with John in each division. And John and I ended up beating the 2 seed out of the gates, 3-1. Two really good players. Guy played at Virginia Tech, and both guys played at Virginia Tech, and they were 34. And I mean, we came out serving and volleying and just putting overheads away. And these guys
bouncing balls over the fence.
Yes, which is very tough to do on grass. It is very difficult to bounce the ball over the fence, but we could. We learned to hit the angle even better. And we beat these guys, and it's like, wow, that was fun. And I played a couple singles matches, and then that was first doubles match. And then we won another one. We got to semis, won a semi, got to the finals, lost in the finals, and we got a silver ball. And, you know, and John goes, getting to a ball round is hard to do. Uh-huh. You know, it doesn't matter even if the draw is 16, you know, it's still, you got to win matches, and there's not bad players that go to these tournaments. And so from right then, I was really addicted then.
Yeah.
So then the next year is like, oh, all right, where else can we go? And so Jessica and I started going to a couple. I went to Sacramento and played 30s indoor and then played the grass the next year, you know. So that's how the ball got rolling in the 30s. And, you know, it was a blast.
So how old are you now?
Just turned 45 last week. So
played 15 years of senior events.
Yep.
How many gold balls have you won?
Yep, I've won 6 gold balls, 5 in doubles, 1 in singles, and then silver and bronze, silver singles and doubles. I think I was at 13. So I've got about 20. I've got them in the 30s and 35s. I had not gotten a ball in the 40s, so my goal is to get a ball in every age division.
Until
you know, my ultimate goal, and I figured this out 10 years ago, I was like, you know what? I am practicing and playing. People ask, why you play all this tennis? Why you go to these tournaments and all that? I go, well, I want to be number one in the world when I'm 80. I figure I got to outlive some of my competition.
Right.
And then I got to stay active and hopefully be able to move at that time. I thought, I'm 6 foot two. I might shrink a little bit, but I still have long arms and I have a good serve and I can hit a drop shot. And you get up in the 70s and the 80s, if you got a serve and you can hit a drop shot, those guys are deadly. So that's kind of my thought. That's what I'm practicing for. All these tournaments are leading up to the 80s. Yeah, yeah.
What would you say the highlight of your senior career has been? What's your favorite gold, silver ball, whatever, you know?
Yeah, I think probably, so in 2010, I got silver ball with John Herring. So next year he couldn't go, so TC Lackey and I hooked up. And this is 2011 at the grass. And we hadn't, I don't think we'd ever played together yet. That was our first time we'd played together. But we both could play doubles. And he played for John Herring at Georgetown College. So we kind of got our feet going, and we ended up winning the grass courts in 2011 for our first gold ball. And he had never gotten a ball, but he had played a lot of father-son with his right. dad. And so, you know, out of the gate, I've two years in a row, I got a silver and a gold. This is great. You know, it's not easy, but you know, he got a gold. So that was probably one of the coolest things. And we came back, 2014 got a second gold ball. And that one was cool because we beat a former NCAA individual champion. It was on the other side. So we played the finals against two guys, and one played for Illinois, one played for Vandy. And that was their first tournament on grass. And we got them in three sets. Needless to say, in 2015, we got back to the finals on the grass. We played that same pair, and they beat us like 2-2.
Who was that? Do you remember?
Yeah, it was Bill McGugan and Kerry Franklin. Played at Illinois, and he won the individual doubles.
He won the doubles.
And
that year that he won the doubles, he lost to Carlos Dorada of Kentucky.
Okay.
In the second round.
So that'd been 2001.
It would have been 2000. Yeah.
2000. Yeah. So, I mean, just good players, but that's probably one of the, you know, so you kind of remember some of these things. Winning a gold on the grass at singles was, you know, definitely accomplishment getting, you know, in singles, it is definitely, if you can, it's an accomplishment getting to the semis of any of those tournaments because you got to go through some players. And, but some of these doubles wins have been great. And then I've been fortunate enough to win a couple indoor ones also. And, but just the amount of players, and everybody has a different story, but we all kind of got there the same way. You know, we played some form of college or whatever, and some people played some pro tennis, low level and stuff, but age is the ultimate equalizer.
Uh-huh.
But fitness is the other equalizer. And I still feel like I can continue to improve my tennis game and keep the fitness at a very high level. And I think that offsets some guys who are just naturally talented, you know, but, you know, we've all, you know, in your 30s and 40s, you know, you got life, you get married and kids and work and everything, and how much you play, you know, it's just everybody's doing it different. But no, it's been a blast so far.
And we want to circle back to family and life, but how many countries has tennis taken you to?
Yeah, I've been fortunate enough to start playing some international tennis. 2015 is first year I got to play, played a U.S. versus Canada weekend. So I've played in Canada two or three times. Got to travel to, in 2023, I got selected for the 35s, ITF senior 35s team. So I got to play Team USA in Turkey. So I got to play in Turkey. That was an awesome experience. Then last summer of 24, got to play another Team USA event through the USIC, and we got to go play against U.S. versus Belgium, U.S. versus Luxembourg, and we had a group of us, or about 8 or 10 of us, and then we wound up getting to play. Great Britain had a 100th year celebration. For their IC, their inner club.
Uh-huh.
And I was on the U.S. team, and we got to play at Wimbledon. So I got to play in England.
Wow.
And as we kind of made our tour through Europe last summer, which was an awesome experience. You know, we hit in pretty much every country. You know, we found a tennis court in Belgium, Luxembourg, Amsterdam. We hit in Ireland, and then we did hit in Scotland, then we hit in England. So got to hit in some of those and just picked up and played with some people and then got to play some tournaments. So it's been fun doing that and get to see a lot of the international. It's funny, a few times been talking to these guys and, well, I went to the college in the States, you know, this year. And you know, you can crisscross over with people and within a couple, you know, degrees, you can find somebody that you know in common.
You know, so Jessica, your wife, her brother Kyle played for me.
Yes.
Great guy.
Yep.
Great family.
Yes.
How important has she been to your tennis?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, whether I want to, she's seen probably 90% of the tennis matches I've played, I would say. And whether if I come off I won, you know, she's critical and, you know, hey, you did this. If I've lost, whether I wanted to hear it or not, you know, she usually was right on, you know, what went wrong that day, you know, or that match. So I think that's always been good. I don't think I really, you know, when you're thinking about getting married to somebody, you know, it wasn't, you know, there's no handbook on how you meet or how you're going to interact with somebody. But I didn't know that I wanted to marry somebody who was into tennis necessarily. But I think when I realized that part of our relationship was growing and in college and stuff, and she liked to play a lot also and played tournaments and everything and loved to compete and, you know, got ranked in nationally and stuff. I think that was just a draw. It was so natural for us. And we had somebody to talk to, you know, and it's, and I think that's what's been great over the last 20 some years is that I can text now or come home after a match or this, that, and the other and say this or that. And, you know, I can be wrong, you know, or I can say this, or she can have watched a match and be like, well, you didn't do this right. You didn't do that. Well, it was because of this and because of that. And, you know, but it's always been great to be able to like, okay, yeah, that's probably what happened. You know, she saw it because she knows how I play. She knows how I think during a match and stuff. Yeah. So I think that's what's been phenomenal about my development, my progression, just having that. And same way with whenever she plays, you know, it's like you can diagnose things and you can talk through it. Whether you want to hear the right or wrong or the good or the bad, you know, we've been able to, you know, communicate that well. And that's been pretty cool.
Well, the thing that I've noticed, because you all, and we'll finish up with this, but you all coached at Georgetown together for several years. How many years did you coach together there?
Yeah, so we got that job in 2011. She got her PhD, and the job was open. So she, you know, formally became the coach and in 2011, and I became the unpaid executive volunteer assistant. And we joke about that. And then her career has taken off in a different direction, so she didn't have time. So I ended up taking the head coaching back over in 22 as I'm the head coach. She's the non-executive, you know, assistant along with a couple other people I drag in there. So it's been great having that and, you know, being around the younger kids. You know, when we started in 2011, they're only 10 years younger than us, and now – at 45 years old, these 18-year-olds are 20 plus. Yeah. You know, so that's been the...
Tell me about it.
Yeah. I'm not telling you anything different.
So you... But it, to me, it seems like she's been a super important part of your career from, you know, yes, go to Luxembourg. Yes, go to England. Go play. You know, this is great. I love, you know, and then the fact that she played so much, like you're saying, you know, she understood what you were going through.
Yeah.
You enjoy, you know, as we wind this down here, you enjoy coaching at Georgetown with your other position in insurance?
Yeah. I still do. And like, I always think about it. Oh, when will you not coach anymore? I'm like, I guess when I don't love it and the development. And I think that's one thing I've learned over these years now, the development of my game. And the development of the amount of people I've met and know and everything is that's what's so important. I looking back now, I go, that's what's been the important part, the development. So with these college kids coming in, talk to them when they're 15, 16, 17, 18, then they're there, the development. Like that's, I mean, that's the phenomenal part about everything. And that's the part that I think I learned that that's what I love, seeing the development. What socially, you know, tennis, all that stuff. You know, that's the best part about coaching and or just developing your own game. It's just development, and it happens every day. And then you can look back and go, okay, I've done something.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's hard to believe, you know, like I always felt like, you know, I'm from New Albany, and how do I end up, you know, coaching, you know, players in the NCAA singles final?
Yeah.
And for you, you're from Sellersburg, yeah. And it's a long way from Sellersburg and the Silver Creek courts to Turkey and the All England Club.
Yes,
at Wimbledon.
Yeah, it is. It's and you can't write it. You can't say there's a path to it perfect or anything. But once again, it's that development and meeting people, and you know, I think that's just the biggest part of it. You know,
last question. You have 19 gold, silver, bronze balls. Mm-hmm. Do you have any idea? Do people have more than that? Is there anybody in Kentucky that has more?
In Kentucky, from what I'm saying, talking like Dr. Eden or yourself, yes. And stuff, I don't think so. I think I probably hold the most amount. I don't know exactly on a couple of the guys who are older and have passed away,
right.
You know, necessarily, but I think in Kentucky I am. Now, there are people across country that I've come in contact with that have, you know, over 100. Now, granted, they're probably 70 years old, you know, I mean, but some of these people and their stories are, oh, I got 46 gold balls, or I've got, you know, I've got 22 father-daughter gold balls, right. Or things like that. So,
well, we're going to keep it right here in Kentucky.
Yeah.
Don't let Mike Eden get any of those gold balls for that great museum he's got.
Absolutely.
Michael, thank you for coming in. We really appreciate your time, and it's great to hear your story.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Dennis.
Thank you.